Well, good morning, everyone. Glad to have you here. I'm Jeff, and if you're here for the first time, I want to welcome you. We have an exciting morning planned for you. Thanks, band and singers. That was excellent. Sorry, kind of got carried away there. Okay, so the assignment over the last week, it's been ongoing, actually, over the last number of weeks, was to go out and engage in discussion with others about our own personal spiritual journeys. If you've been joining us, we've been talking about being open to other people and how they are connecting with God and how it looks for them. Sometimes I think it's easy, or easier anyways, to do that, to engage in these conversations with other people about how it is they relate to God, how it is they connect, and what it is they do that is meaningful to them, all those kind of things. I think it's easier to do that with people who share a lot of the same beliefs and practices and perspectives, isn't it? Like, when they share a lot of the same springs, it's almost effortless. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, oh yeah, no, exactly. I know what you're saying, yeah. But what about people who share a lot less beliefs, perspectives, experiences, understandings of God? Can we learn? Can we grow from them and their experience? Can God speak to us through people who are a lot different from us? For the last 3 weeks, we've been challenging ourselves to connect with God in higher levels of intentionality. Specifically, we've been looking at the role that our beliefs and our perspectives play in doing that. Like these springs on a trampoline, the point of our beliefs, the point of our understandings is to help us jump, to live like Christ in our world. We've highlighted different beliefs or springs that members of our teaching team hold. Some mornings, you've probably realized we hold opposing views at times on certain things. We've shared openly about that. And it's funny how even Vince and I can sit here, we can hold different springs on each of our trampolines, and yet my spring helps me connect with God and live like Christ in the world, just like his does for him. We're not doing this whole exercise to polarize our community or to get people saying, I think he's right, and yeah, he's missed it. Or I like her, and I don't care for that. It's not necessarily to do that at all, but rather to emphasize the God-given diversity of each of our spiritual journeys. God doesn't need us to think and act exactly the same in order for us to connect with him and his purposes here on earth. Doesn't need that. In fact, the more open we are, the more we realize just how different each one of us is. We also wanted to emphasize the role or the important role that conversation with others can have. It's amazing, this open, respectful dialogue, what can come out of that. How we can discover different perspectives, different ways, different things that people are learning and growing through, and how it's helping them connect with God. And it might even be different, a little different than us, but sometimes we can discover that what is working for them actually might work better for us. Amazing how that can happen. So this is why we've invited Jewish Rabbi Howard Voss Altman to join us this morning. We asked him to come and share about his own personal spiritual journey. Not only that, but how spiritual journeys within the Jewish community seem to work from his perspective. So I'm really excited about this. This is going to be good. You're going to like Rabbi Howard. I know I have some questions that I wanted to ask him, but chances are you might have a couple that you'd like to ask him too. So we want to give an opportunity partway into the interview to allow for conversations from the community to be asked of. And he's totally open to that. He's saying, yeah, bring it on. Let's go. So this is what we're going to do. There's the number. If you want to ask a question, you can just get your phone out. Otherwise, phones are always off, right? But today you got your full license to go ahead and text us your questions. They're going to be coming up throughout the service, and then we'll take a break. We'll do DFW, and then we'll come back and hopefully answer as many as we can, all right? So I want to waste no more time. Will you put your hands together with a warm welcome and welcome Rabbi Howard Voss Ullman. Welcome. Come on up. All right. So, I don't know.
Thank you.
Rabbi, can I, these people don't know you. I know when I first walked into your office this week, I was expecting something a little different in terms of a Jewish rabbi. Was this what you were expecting, or was this a little different? Maybe this was what you're expecting, right? Yeah. So can we begin, Rabbi, by telling us why there's a disconnect here? With all due respect.
The reason why it's different is because this gentleman is tapping into a way in which Jewish people lived about 300-500 years ago. And they lived separately from everybody else. And part of what happened was that when the world changed for Jews and we began to move out of the ghetto, which is Italian word for where Jewish people lived. When we moved out of the ghetto, we said, hey, wait a second. We don't have to look like that. We can look like everybody else and still be Jewish. And so I do.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Rabbi, you are... I was just struck a number of times throughout our meeting this week in your office, just how you are very... similar. You're very integrated into, Canadian culture for the most part.
Yes.
You're married.
Tell us. I'm married. I have three children. Emily's 15. Judah is 11. Addie is 8. And my wife, Annie, is just about to graduate from the University of Calgary Law School.
Fantastic.
So we're really proud of her. We're from the United States of America. Almost all the rabbis are. In Canada, because we're too small a people to have a seminary here. Mm-hmm. But we've made our home in Canada, in Calgary, since 2002 and feel very Canadian.
Awesome. So, what kind of music would you listen to?
I listen to mostly rock and roll. I listen to Grateful Dead and Fish.
Awesome.
And Hot Tuna. Yeah.
I've always never had a chance to ask some of these questions.
No one's ever asked me those questions here on the... Even in my congregation, they never asked me
Just wait till you see some of them up, I'm sure. Yeah. Vince censors some, all right? favorite restaurant, if you're going to take your wife out in Calgary?
We go to... Our favorite restaurant is Buchanan's, the steakhouse.
Oh, okay.
Downtown on 3rd Avenue there. We love that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Do you watch much TV?
We do. Well, no, we don't really watch much TV.
It's okay, you're safe.
But we watch, like, with my daughter, we watch Glee.
Okay.
And we love Glee.
Oh, Gleeks are in the house.
Yeah.
Don't get them going.
We're musical comedy people, and we watch The Amazing Race, and...
Are you a Flames fan?
Yes.
You are? All right.
Yes, I'm a Flames fan.
Yeah, we had a rough outing last night.
But. Yeah, no, it was really... We were... Typical in my family is that I did a program at the synagogue, and then my daughter, Emily, and her friend were at the symphony at the CPO, because my daughter, all three of our children play violin and cello. And so they were at the symphony, and I went, and I picked them up at 10 o'clock, and they got back in the car, and I said, we've got to turn the Flames game on and see what's going on. Listen to Peter Maher. And
enough culture. Let's get the sports happening. Yeah.
Exactly, right. We're moving from Brahms to the Flames. It's It's very good.
Rabbi, this week we came in really with an agenda, and the agenda was to ask you about your spiritual journey.
Yeah.
Specifically, to ask you how you connect with God personally. Mm. The response was interesting. Do you want to just kind of answer how we... Because we just opened up and said, how does it work for you?
Right. And I was saying to Jeff and to Vince that My personal journey is not really an issue for the Jewish people. Indeed, our journey as a people is one we go on together. It is a peoplehood response to God. In other words, we were all redeemed from Egypt. We were all standing at Mount Sinai when God revealed the Torah to us. And so our journey is on behalf of the people. And so when I think about my role as rabbi, I don't really think very much about my relationship to God, nearly as much as I think about how our people connect both to each other and to the world. Indeed, when our people think of themselves as Jews, then I'm doing my job.
Huh. Yeah. So this took me a while as I was listening to you, because you're just saying, no, we never really asked that question. How do I personally connect with God? Yeah. In fact, I was reading an article this week. I mentioned this morning. You were part of a panel, Globe and Mail. You're the kind of a regular contributor.
I am. Once a month, we have the Faith Exchange, and you can look on it every month on globeandmail.com.
And mm-hmm. Anyways, the question was, the whole topic was on the future of religion in Canada. But
yeah.
But you made an interesting statement. You said, we cannot find a sense of connection to God by ourselves. It's a covenant between God and the Jewish people, not the Jewish individual. I began to kind of put together that this is more about the community. Community response to God, community connection to God, than it is about, say, you as an individual.
And it's interesting because when I was interviewed for this position as the rabbi of Temple B'nai Tikva, I said that my goal was to build a community. To build a community of meaning. I think actually that's what is going on here as well. Indeed, when we feel that sense of community, then there's a chance to see our lives in a Jewish way, in a Jewish context, and then do the work that we're charged to do, that covenantal work.
Okay, so that moment, and we've kind of gone back and forth on this, the moment when you start seeing your community come together,
yes,
do what they were called to do.
Right, and we don't say called.
Or, okay.
But be in covenant.
Okay.
Be in covenant. That's what we are. Then we find a place of holiness.
Hmm.
It isn't, you can't do it on your own. Jewish people live in community. That's the only way we know how to be Jewish. Next Saturday night, we will have a celebration called Purim, where everyone dresses up and we make fun of every single thing in Judaism. Everything. Now, in some communities, not ours, but in some communities, you are commanded to be, well, I can't put it any other way. You're commanded to be drunk. There's a reason for that morally, but we don't do that because we're good German rationalists. But in other communities, like that rabbi there, that's what he's doing.
Is that right?
Yeah. Because we need in our lives as a people to have a sense of humor. If you can't make fun of yourselves and of the religion that drives you the other 364 days, then you've lost.
Tell me something, Rabbi. Yeah. When you come together and say you have right. this big humor night,
yes,
and you're laughing, goofing right. off at Judaism's expense.
Totally.
Yeah, and so is that a, for lack of a better term, is that a God moment when you look at the
people
coming? Huh?
Completely, because we recognize.
Wow, that's not a mind bender. Yeah,
just to get through the day is a difficult proposition, and our history has been one, and this holidays remembers that oppression, and so our response to that is laughter. At least one day a year, it has to be laughter. But as a community, we experience that together.
Huh.
We could never do it on our own.
The God moment happens when
the God moment happens
together.
When you are together, and you are experiencing this moment of Jewish history and this moment of presentness.
Okay,
so as together.
Okay, so as you come together in that setting, so it's fun and whatever.
Right.
There, but you also speak of justice.
Right.
And how does that work as a community?
And so what in our covenantal relationship with God?
Yeah.
We are commanded in the Torah, in the book of Deuteronomy, we are commanded tzedek, tzedek, tirdof, the most important commandment to me in the Torah. And that means justice, justice shall you pursue. Not make sure that you're here on Shabbat morning saying the liturgy, not making sure that you are celebrating or observing a holiday, making sure that you are pursuing justice as a community.
Can you define justice?
Sure.
Just a real...
Yes, and it's a very much Isaiah-based idea of justice. If you've read the book of Isaiah, yeah, which I know you have, you know what kind of... In other words, don't come to me with your prayers... Actually, that song, Heart of Worship, was like, I'm sorry I made a thing of it and not about you, is actually what we're talking about. It's the thing that gets in the way. We're talking about making sure that the hungry are fed, that the poor are clothed, and that the poor and the weak are within our walls. In other words, it doesn't really matter to us if Jews are experiencing poverty or if it's another group. We are commanded to make sure that they experience justice because that is our relationship with God as a people. Hmm. We do In From the Cold at our synagogue. We're lucky enough to have space that we turn our synagogue into a homeless shelter one day a week or one night a week. And in that moment, when our guests spend the night with us and we do the laundry and we feed them breakfast and lunch and dinner, and they are sitting in our social hall watching a film or just trying to rest their tired feet, we experience the meaning of justice.
Mm, awesome.
That's our experience.
And that's a God moment.
That's a God moment.
Huh.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
There is no God moment, actually, outside of that community of meaning.
Okay, so now let me push back, because we were chatting, right?
Right,
and,
yes.
And so we asked, okay, no, come on, there's got to be some personal experience, and you shared one.
I did, and it's actually, I haven't seen it, but if you buy today's Calgary Herald, I'm interviewed like this. When you only have four rabbis in the whole community, you are in demand. The media church. I am like a living embodiment of what it means to be in demand. I am the rabbi of every Christian in this community. It's me.
Okay, so
I was saying to Jeff and to Vince that I do experience a sense of the divine when I'm skiing with my children. And the reason I feel that way is not only because I'm surrounded by the majesty of Banff and the extraordinary moments when the snow is just the majesty of Banff and the extraordinary moments when the snow is just in that perfect place in the trees and you're skiing in powder. It's not only that. It's that if I am not completely one with my world, I'm going to fall and break my ankle, which is a very bad thing at age 50. So at that moment, Jeff, when I am digging an edge, I am completely present. In other words, my ego is gone. The I is gone. I'm not thinking about my sermon Friday night. I'm not thinking about the funeral that I did last week. I'm not thinking about my parent-teacher conference today. I am only thinking about this one thing, which is the experience of my body, the snow, and being amongst God's creation.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I find that personally is God. But on the other side of the coin, I'm not necessarily experiencing oneness when I'm leading worship. Hmm. I might. But I'm also recognizing that I am here for others to make sure that the worship experience is what it ought to be.
Right.
Which
right.
is not necessarily about my connecting with God, but rather about ensuring an experience for the people, for to put it in a more crass term, but one we use all the time, a corporate understanding of worship.
Right. Let me ask you this. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No. I was going to say, we never even pray individually. It's only communal.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? I was going to ask you, you have this ideal of, you know, Judaism holds this ideal of community responding to justice and together just living as a community. What do you suppose is probably your greatest enemy to that? What gets in the way of that most, do you think?
I think the enemy of the Jewish people in terms of their sense of community is affluence and security. You see, in the United States and Canada, we are in the middle of an extraordinary experiment that the Jewish people have never experienced before. It's called acceptance. You see, we live in much the same way that you live. In other words, our children go to schools where Christians go to school. Our members of our synagogue work in all fields and all professions with you. And that acceptance and the relative absence of anti-Semitism in our community enables us to live in a state of normalcy that has never existed for our people, and in many ways still doesn't exist for the people of Israel, even though the nation is designed to be a normal nation, like every other nation. But in Canada and the United States, because of the absence of anti-Semitism, we don't have to rally around each other. We don't feel the same bonds that adversity create. And as a result of our security, our affluence, our success, and the tolerance and acceptance that is a hallmark of Canadian society, our need for community is simply not as strong as it once was. And it wasn't always this way in Canada, but it is today. And as a result, the bonds that our community form around that huddling together against the world, that's starting to break apart. And we're seeing a lot of distance that we never saw before. Not that we want adversity, we don't. We just kind of want us to be together anyway.
It's interesting, you pointed out there's a key difference between, say, Judaism and Christianity is around this thing called salvation.
Yeah.
You were pointing this out the other day, you know, kind of the motivation behind many Christians is achieving salvation. That's not the case for you guys. That's no. Not a part of it. Do you want to just unpack that a bit?
Yeah, if I can. We have no real concept outside of a tiny minority of ultra-Orthodox Jews. We have no real concept of a heaven or a hell. So that our covenant with God and with each other is a covenant for this life, this earth. I said to my students yesterday, I was teaching them, and I said, what do you get at the end of the day when you do, the word is tikkun olam, which is when you repair the broken world, what do you get? And my kids responded, a better earth. That's what we get. In other words, our commandments to repair the world are simply for the sake of repairing the world so that we will live in a community of justice. There's no reward. We know that we will be in the ground. We will return to the earth from where we came. And we feel even better about doing that as long as we've made the meaningful difference that we're commanded to make now.
Wow. And that's part of God's covenant. God's blessed you. You turn around to bless the world.
That's ideally what moves people. Yes.
And do you find that in and of itself is motivation enough for people to engage in this Jews?
It's the only motivation they have.
Awesome.
And you know, we talk about justice in our Torah, and I was sharing this with Jeff this morning. When Abraham argues with God about destroying Sodom, Abraham argues down, if there are 50 righteous people, don't destroy it, 40, 30. That dialogue with God, that's our covenant. We're not doing it in order to get in God's good graces, because we're not in God's good graces, because we're arguing. We're wrestling. Yisrael, the term for the Jewish people, Yisrael, means the people who wrestle with God. We're not questioning, arguing, wrestling in order to receive anything more. Other than that process, that relationship of wrestling is all that we seek. It's all that we seek. And as long as we can argue and wrestle with God, we'll do our work, we'll seek justice, and then our community will be in a better place.
In terms of your own personal standing with God, though, you don't see yourselves at odds with God.
No.
You see yourselves...
No, in covenant.
Yeah, like...
No.
You said, hey, we're good.
Right.
We're good.
Right. That's why we're secure enough to argue. You only argue with people you love, right? People you don't love, I can walk away. It's all right. You can disagree with me, I'm good. But with God, we're really engaged in this relationship. We have to be, so that what we experience is a question. Why did you do this, God? Why are we in this situation? Why is the world not a better place? Well, God said it's not a better place because you're not doing your work. That's why it's not a better place. Do your work, and you'll find that the earth is a much better place. But you have to do it.
What struck me in our conversation the other day was how you pointed out it's different when you're, you know, for many Christians, we become Christians at some point. You're not born Christian. I mean, maybe some of you feel like you were because you're raised in a Christian family, but we're not born Christians. Jews are different.
Yeah.
You were born. It's a nationality. So it's not so much just spiritual. It's very cultural. And it's your nationality.
Exactly. It is. I define myself as a Jewish Canadian. I mean, that's
so you're never worried about losing your standing.
No.
You're not going to lose your Jewish.
No, we can't. Whether we believe or not. This rabbi once said, on Yom Kippur is our highest holy day, and we fast for 27 hours and pray almost all that time, and except for when we're sleeping. But this rabbi said that even someone who is eating a ham sandwich on the middle of Yom Kippur is as Jewish as Jewish can be. Because we simply can't rid ourselves of who we are. It's like you can't say, oh, I'm not a subject of Canada or the UK because I was born there. And that's so, how we feel.
And it's not just losing your nationality, but losing your right standing with God.
Exactly.
Okay.
You have to, but I'll tell you how you can lose it.
Okay.
By living in Grand Prairie. No offense to Grand Prairie.
You lost me there.
No,
I'm sorry.
I know. It's not just Grand Prairie. It's actually any place where Jewish people don't live.
Huh.
We have to live in community with each other. If I go out to Grand Prairie, what am I going to do with myself?
Because there's no Jews up there.
There are no Jews there. I need 10 people to have a service, 10 Jews to have a service. Why do I need 10 Jews to have a service? Because you got to ask the other person or the other 9 people, how are you? What's going on in your life? You can't pray in the absence of 10 Jews.
So it, and this
so
is
I can't
so
live in I can't live in Grand Prairie. If I do, then what's my Jewish identity mean?
Hmm.
Outside of my world of corporate community, I can't be Jewish.
Okay.
I must live where other Jews are.
All right. I've hogged some time here. So what we're going to do is we're going to break quickly. We're going to...
We have to go over.
Sorry?
We have to... Now that I'm not going to the conference, we have to go over. People
okay.
Stay.
All right. You're all okay right. with that. All yeah. right. We have some questions that are generating here. Angela, can I turn it over to you to take DFW? We'll do that now. We'll look over the questions and then we'll come back. That was it. That was a break. Well, yeah. Hey, huh. Down to business. Angela gets us moving.
Oh, so there's like no... Oh, like when I speak at other churches, when they pass the... we don't pass the plate, by the way.
You don't?
No. No.
How do you do that?
People pay me in advance. I could never handle the...
you don't trust them. You say, no, pay me
right,
now,
exactly.
And then I'll do your deal. Okay,
right.
Nice.
No,
nice.
I mean, the money comes up front.
No, we can learn a lot from our brother.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. All right, so there's lots of questions, and you're salivating at some of these. You wanted to answer them. Can I... we're going to have to move quick here.
Yeah.
Let's see. Do you have any hopes or opinions on the current situations in Libya, Egypt, and the uprisings in the Middle East? Do you want to go there quick?
Yes. Our hope and what we take solace from is that so far the uprisings in Egypt, in Tunisia, and now in Libya are not uprisings that have to do with American power or an anti-Israel sentiment. It's purely from the people because they wish to have freedom and some sense of personal autonomy. As a result, we're very heartened by that possibility and by hopefully stable governments that will wish to have good relationships with Israel.
Thank
so it's we see it as very positive. It may not be positive immediately, but it'll be positive eventually.
Long term, you see
Long-term.
It moving in the right direction.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Are the sacrifices in the First Testament, obviously the Hebrew Bible, necessary for forgiveness, salvation? Or were they more of a symbolic gesture of atonement with God?
You know, they were more of a symbolic gesture of atonement with God. It had to be done because the sacrifices at that time, because you had a nomadic people dependent upon God's beneficence for survival. And so therefore, there had to be an establishment of connection between livestock, rainfall, and God. In terms of atonement, however, we recognize today that atonement can only occur when we seek each other out and say, not only am I sorry for my thoughtlessness or my selfishness, but rather I will, my deeds will enable me to move forward. In other words, I won't be repeating the same error again. Otherwise, you haven't done atonement. It must be with deeds in the future. Sorry is only the first stage. It's your deeds in the future when confronted with the same situation.
So talk
again.
Is cheap.
Talk is cheap.
Live it out.
That's right.
And that's how atonement ends up.
Absolutely. And it can
realized.
Only be done with those who you have wronged. In other words, then you should ask, well, how can someone who's murdered someone, how can they make atonement? And the answer is, they really can't. You're done.
Huh.
You take someone's life, you will be living with that sin.
Wow. There was someone here that you
wanted
to go to.
I wanted to just, let me just, there's actually...
Sure.
What if you have to move to Grand Prairie? Okay. Now, no, that's a good question.
No, that is a good question.
The answer is, if you have to move to Grand Prairie, you have to figure out a way to get back here. In other words, it's only temporary. So
okay.
I mean that.
No, no.
It's just like your work is not nearly so important as making sure that you can get out of Grand Prairie and get back to a Jewish community.
Because ultimately what you're saying is if you want to connect with God, it is within a Jewish community that you're going to connect with them.
You're not going to it's not going to happen on your own.
Okay, do Jews believe in an afterlife? I think you just mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, and really, as a very, very tiny minority of Jews, ultra-Orthodox Jews who do believe. But I'm talking about normative 97% kind of Judaism. There's no belief in the afterlife.
Do you have to convert to Judaism if you marry a Jew?
No. No. I perform interfaith marriages because the interfaith marriage rate in Calgary is about 80%. Remember I talked to you about how accepted we are? Well, that's what happens.
We love you guys.
I know,
we can't help it.
I know. But we don't want you to love us to death. You see, that's...
This is not necessarily a great thing.
No, I know. Right? It's not. Yeah. You see, when you're separate from people, you manage to keep it together. But it's that's the burden of success, you see. So no, you don't have to. But I will say that in my experience as a rabbi, I have met one person, and I've spoken to thousands and thousands of people along my journey, one person who has converted out of Judaism to Christianity. Whereas I probably convert about 15 to 20 people per year who convert from Christianity to Judaism.
And why do you think that is?
It's because most people who are, well, actually, to be perfectly frank about it, Christians who are seeking don't believe in the divinity of Jesus and therefore find Judaism to be more at home with their own spiritual lives. And then secondarily, my purpose in marrying people is that they should create Jewish families, that is, produce Jewish children, and that it's as they know they're going to raise the children as Jews, it's just easier for everyone if the non-Jew converts.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your honesty on that. I really appreciate
that. Happens.
Why are Jewish people so financially successful?
Because
that's a good one. That's
it
fair.
It is. It's
you do
it's
well.
We do well, yeah. And as a result of Jewish people being financially successful, I get to be financially successful, which is excellent.
So that's why? Or I don't get that.
No. But when I went into the rabbinate, my wife was raised Presbyterian, by the way. I too had an interfaith marriage. And then after we got married, my wife converted to Judaism. And my poor mother-in-law, you know, she was good Presbyterian. And I'm sure she never envisioned that not only would her daughter become Jewish, but that her son-in-law would be a rabbi. But anyway... So what she was worried about mostly when I told her that I was going to go to rabbinical school was that her experience with ministers in the United States was that they kind of they live in somewhat
poverty.
Yeah, semi-poverty. That's right.
Yeah,
and she did not want that for her daughter. But then when I got to rabbinical school, I found out that rabbis don't live in semi-poverty, that indeed we live a lot like our congregants do, which is that in very middle-class circumstances. And as a result, she felt better. But the reason why Jews are primarily financially successful is because, one, we put education first and foremost, ahead of everything else. Growing up, I knew that I was going to go to university and then graduate school when I was 4 years old. I mean,
it was predetermined.
And secondarily, we are financially successful because we've had to be very innovative. As a result of anti-Semitism, we were not allowed to practice certain professions. And so either we started our own or we were innovative. I will just tell you a brief story. You know those puzzles where the puzzle pieces are enclosed in a casing and then there's one piece missing and you can move around and manipulate it to make a shape or to put numbers in order?
Mm-hmm.
You know those puzzles? Yeah. Well, my grandfather invented those puzzles.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's right. And he was a toy maker and inventor, and those puzzles were his invention. And as a result, I grew up in very nice circumstances.
Oh, fantastic.
My grandfather did not have a college education. He grew up from nothing, the way most Jews did who came to this country. But we are a very innovative people because we've had to be. And as a result, we've been successful.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, some quick ones here. Do you see Jesus as a Jewish rabbi?
I see Jesus as a Jewish rabbi. Okay. And nothing more.
Okay.
By the
okay.
way.
Okay. Well, when we go there.
Like me, but not like me.
Okay, so why?
More famous.
A little more, yes.
A little, just a little bit, only a little bit.
Okay,
like
so.
Same plane, though.
Okay, so why don't Jews recognize Jesus as their Messiah?
And the reason we don't is because we believe that Jesus lived and died as a Jew and did not have anything to do with anything other than Judaism, and that his message, he had the prophets, and he was preaching Isaiah as we do today. And because we don't believe that the Messiah has come at all, because the world isn't perfected. So we couldn't possibly believe that there was a Messiah that came and didn't perfect the world. We'll know when the Messiah comes because the world will be different. But in Reform Judaism, just so that you know, unlike the Orthodox, we don't believe in any Messiah whatsoever. Indeed, we're the ones responsible for creating the kind of world that God would see as perfected. We're responsible for that. It's the nature of the covenant.
You believe that would have been what Jesus was raised in and believed?
I absolutely do. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
How's everyone doing? All right. Has this not been excellent? Great insights, Rabbi Howard. We'd love to go on, but we have children's workers down there who will string me up if I take it too long, because our kids are so well-behaved, but they have a time limit. So anyways, can we just say a big thank you to Rabbi Howard? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Will you close in prayer?
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Fantastic. I've asked Rabbi Howard if he would close by praying in Hebrew for us today.
And I'm going to do a traditional prayer, which is a prayer that we say to celebrate the redemption of our freedom from slavery. When we crossed the sea, Miriam, Moses' sister, led the people in singing, and we said, it's in the Torah, we said, Mi chamocha ba'ilim Adonai, who is like you, O God? None is like you, because none could have done this parting of the sea. So I'll sing for you.
Wow.
I mean, I got to stand up. Cause
okay, yeah, absolutely. Is that all right? Okay. Yes.
Mi chamocha ba'elim Adonai, mi chamocha nehedar bakodesh, nora tehilot o sefele, nora tehilot o sefele. Shira HaKadosha, Shibchu Geulim, Lishimcha Sfatayam, Yachad Kulam, Hodu Vehimlichu, Ve'ameru, Adonai Imloch, Le'olam Va'ed.
Peace and God be with you this week. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.